Blog Talk Radio.
And do what we do to mold and shape a living for our loved ones and our family. Ladies and gentlemen, we are living in some very trying, trying times, which we all realize. We are faced with a pandemic, COVID-19. On top of that, we are faced with another disease called white supremacy and racism. And under the cloak of all of the things that are going on, and I would be remiss if I didn't, we're going to take a quick minute of silence for Brother George Floyd and his loved ones. I want to thank you. We know, as those who are of African descent and an African American community living in this country, that what we face every day in dealing with the police departments. But there's another very, very important war going on out here, ladies and gentlemen. It's something that we take for granted every day, because we go in our homes and we hit the light switch, we hit the air conditioning switch, because it's going to be 95 degrees today. And it comes on, but it's called energy. And in doing so, we know that the biggest thing the Barack Hussein Obama's administration did was not the Affordable Care Act. It was called the Sunshine Identity Initiative. And this initiative was done with, on the back of the Green Jobs Act that was put into place when Katrina hit New Orleans. And Van Jones, who had served as an attorney, as well as he started a group called Green for All, offered the Green Jobs Act. And from that act, we had become poor in 2008 when Obama was elected after black folks went to the polls in untold numbers, and we elected Barack Hussein Obama. His administration put the solar energy industry on steroids by issuing $31 billion in federal loan guarantees, which gave rise to programs for solar for low and moderate income families across this nation. The Department of Energy had $9.1 billion in federal aid to assist those families. I have the privilege of having one of those advocacy organizations, which was started right here in our nation's capital. The organization is referred to as Neighborhoods United, and they started here in D.C., and it was known as SUN. It was started by a very dynamic young lady by Mrs. Anna Schulman, and she had the insight to hire this young lady, Mrs. Yacina Riviera, who served as the Director of Energy, Equity, and Inclusion for Neighborhoods United. And under this massive pressure and time for people's attention, we have facing us a petition which has been filed with the Federal Regulatory Commission. And that specific petition could destroy solar energy as we know it. And I want to set the table a little more before I bring Mrs. Riviera onto these airwaves. Because I want to share with our listening audience that on May 13th, I received an email from the executive director of Neighborhoods United. This is at a school. And it went on to say, Rawlings, a front group for evictions utilities, has launched an outrageous attack on our solar rights. It could cost you thousands of dollars if you have solar, or make it impossible for you to go solar in the future. They want the federal regulators to block you from earning a fair credit for surplus electricity your solar panels produce. They want to overturn nearly 40 years of state energy policy and put it in the hands of the federal government. And they want to do it while everyone's attention is focused on the health crisis. They've had paid $30,000 to speed up the process before you know it, what's happening. You have less than 30 days to raise your voice concerning this. Leaders across the country are fighting back. They are demanding that the Federal Regulatory Commission protect your solar rights. Make sure that your government knows this. And it was, and I live in Maryland, so there has to be a live link there so you could go to log right into this and you could raise your voice and let your voice be heard around this issue. Now, I have on board Mrs. Yesenia Riviera. I want to give you a little of her background. She is a very outstanding young lady. As Director of the Energy Equity and Inclusion, Yesenia has spent the last 10 years focusing on community development. She has a BS in biology from the University of Puerto Rico, Chavez, and a JD from the University of the District of Columbia, David Clark Law School. It was during the time in law school that she began her journey working with low and moderate income families in the district as a student attorney in the community development clinic. She was excited to be a part of Solar United Neighbors, where she can continue her love of the science and community development to help expand a solar across the district, having the benefit of solar for herself and being passionate about assisting DC homeowners to make the transition to solar. Welcome aboard, Christina. Thank you for taking time from your very busy schedule to join us here on Solar Now and the Future.
Thanks for the kind words, Ron. It's my pleasure to be on your show and talk to your listeners.
Well, you said the conversation that I asked you to come on with today, I sort of gave our listening audience some backdrop what's at stake. But what is at stake for Black and communities of color if the New England Ratepayers Association petition is approved by the Federal Regulatory Commission?
Okay, so I want to give a little background on what net metering is and why we're fighting this challenge. So just to set the stage, like if you're a solar homeowner, most of the solar systems as we know them are tied to the grid. That means the electricity flows back into the grid. So whenever you have a nice sunny day and you're producing a lot of energy and not using it, that goes back into the grid. When you're using energy but not producing, you take it from the grid. So 49 states and D.C. have this policy where you get credited for that extra energy you produce, and it's a one-to-one credit. So let's say I produce 1,000 kilowatt hours in the month, and I use 1,000 kilowatt hours of energy. That means I don't have to pay Pepco for anything because I produce as much as I used. So if I produce more, then they give me a credit. In D.C., that credit rolls over. In Maryland, it rolls over, but once a year they clear off the account and pay me for whatever's left that I didn't use. So that's what's at stake here, is that credit that we get for producing our own energy, is that control over where our energy comes from. That really is what's the bottom line. It's like, and we know that the Black community, communities of color, have paid a higher energy burden than anybody else. They've been disproportionately affected by shutoffs, by utility shutoffs, and they've been historically deprived of control over where their energy comes from. And this is a challenge to that. If FERC were to grant the petition, we could easily see an increase in electric bills due to the loss of net metering, because let's say I produce 1,000 kilowatt hours, I use 1,000 kilowatt hours, but if I'm not longer getting a credit one-to-one, I still have to pay PEPCO for the 1,000 kilowatt hours I use. But they're only paying me wholesale for the amount I produce, and that's way lower than I would pay for what I actually use. So that's what's at stake. We can only guess what would happen because, like you said, this policy has been in place for almost 40 years. So we're not sure exactly what's going to happen once they eliminate that, if they decide to grant the petition. You know, it can affect net metering customers all across the country. It can increase, it can lead to higher bills. It can make it harder for people to go solar, because if you don't have that one-to-one credit, it's going to be a lot more expensive to go solar. It's going to be a lot more expensive to control where your energy comes from.
So you're seeing it right now on the national average. So what would you say would cost? Because I know that solar has come down tremendously in the last 5 years, but what would you say the average cost of the systems are that y'all are being able to, that you're working with? And one of the great things about Neighborhoods United, and I'm not just blowing smoke because you've seen it, it's on the air with me today, is because I have been in the trenches with them. I've been out at the community outreach meetings that they held in all 8 wards of the District of Columbia. And they had the most powerful education outreach component that educated the community in the evenings when they would do the education outreach meetings, informing the community on the complete process of going solar and the power of forming a cooperative and what it does in giving them more options and purchasing power. And this was and is a great program. Could you share with our listening audience a little about that outreach program and how this would impact the growth of an advocacy organization, educational organization such as Neighborhoods United, which is a 501c3 organization, because I know that it started here, but y'all have been able to have tremendous growth. And share with our audience how many cities and municipalities that y'all are in now.
We are in 12 states now. Besides D.C., we have programs in Maryland, Virginia, West Virginia, Minnesota, Florida, Ohio, Indiana, Texas, Arizona, Colorado. Is that Minnesota? Yeah. So we are spreading across the country. We're trying to get into all 50 states. We're even running a pilot in Puerto Rico. So our number one mission is to help educate people, help them make an informed decision of what it means to go solar, what's involved, what are the questions they need to ask, but also bring them together as a group to make it easier for them to go solar. And once they've gone solar, fight for those energy rights, which is what we're doing right now with the net metering case. And honestly, like I said, we don't know what the impact would be if FERC grants this petition, but we know that if there's not a net metering policy, if there's not a one-to-one credit, then the economics of going solar change.
Well,
so that make it harder for low-income families to go solar, especially if you take a program like DC Solar for All. DC is paying for its low to moderate income residents to go solar, whether it's on their own houses, if they own the roof and they have a decent roof, they'll put a system on your roof. If you're a tenant or you don't own the roof, then you can benefit from community solar. But the basis of that benefit is through net metering. You get a credit on your bill for whatever energy is produced. If you take that credit away, what do we have?
You undervalue and you undergird the whole economics of the abstract system. And that is why I want to have you on today, Justina, to eloquently explain to our listening audience what is at stake as it relates to low and moderate income communities, because your organization also does the, what I call the dirty work. Y'all go through all the meetings. You attend the public hearing at the Public Service Commission, at the Department of Energy, at downtown in front of the D.C. City Council and local councils and municipalities around the country, because that is what it takes to build public policy. And this is the issue that we are facing right now with our police department, because most people have not read Dr. Sandy Gett's book, The Choice, that talks about how public policy from the activities of the Black Panther movement in the 60s rolled into place the passing of, in 1970, the Nixon Law and Order bill. And then you had another bill, and that was in 1970, and right after that, in 70, both in 1970, one in 69, they passed the No Knock Law, which was implemented here in Washington, D.C., during the beginning of the drug culture. I'm contrasting this to let people know that building public policy, going to meetings, results into legislation. And if you don't participate, then you will not be, you won't, if you're not, you won't be at the table, you may be on the table. And we know what happens when you're on the table. And this is what we are facing when we're dealing with interest groups such as this New Hampshire ratepayers group, because I had the privilege of being one of the participants on a webinar that your organization recently had last Thursday. And after your interview, I'm going to play about a half hour of that webinar to give people some idea of who are the players behind this organization that has filed this petition. They have close ties to the fossil fuel industry. And it didn't, you wouldn't have to be a rocket scientist to understand when you begin to look at follow the money, find out who's funding what or whose interest it serves, you will find out that it's the same old player. Now, what has not taken place are that COVID-45 could not do as he tried to turn the clock back on renewable energy and EPA and strike down everything that Barack Obama's administration had put in place. We have COVID-19, and the solar industry has taken a tremendous, and energy industry has taken a tremendous, tremendous hit in terms of layoffs of thousands of people. Over 106,000 people in the first 30 days in the solar and renewable energy industry filed for unemployment. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about an industry that for the last 12 years have outpaced every job sector in the United States in terms of growth. It has grown at 25%. The green economy, the green movement in this country is being driven by climate change. It is not going away. Can we talk about how many states right now that have passed renewable portfolio standards and sort of explain to our listening audience why we need them to go to your organization's website, neighborhoodsunited.org, or they can go to positivechangepc.com, and they will go under our events tab, and they'll be able to find the links where they can go and they can make their voices and heard and contact their local elected officials that can weigh in on this, because as I understand it, most of the municipalities and states who have passed renewable portfolio standard legislation has already filed some type of action with the National Association of Public Service Commissions against this PC. But we urgently need the masses to rally around the issue.
Yeah. So renewable portfolio standards are basically a state's decision that determines where their energy comes from. And states with renewable portfolio standards are moving towards clean energy. For example, D.C. has a 100% RPS, or renewable portfolio standard, by 2032, means that 100% of D.C.'s energy has to come from clean energy sources. Hydro, wind, solar, those kind of energy sources. And D.C. in particular has a 10% solar carve-out, which means that 10% of D.C.'s energy has to come from solar generated inside the district. This helps create jobs. This fuels the green jobs in D.C. because that 10% is specifically from inside the district. So, and you have 20, 21 states that have renewable portfolio standards, including the DMV, Maryland, D.C., Virginia. They all have renewable portfolio standards. Some are higher than others. Virginia, I think, just beefed up theirs. Maryland did as well last year. D.C. moved towards 100% clean energy. So more and more of the states are moving towards that, and those portfolio standards help incentivize the move towards solar energy, help create jobs, and generate local dollars in the economy.
But if you take away net metering and you go from a retail price for that homeowner who is now getting a retail price for that excess energy that those systems are generating or that business is generating, and you move that to a wholesale price, that undergirds the whole system. And that's the reason and the point is about the economics of the game. And we have to that home.
It does. This entire case, it really is about ownership and control of energy. It's about taking the power away from the community to self-determine what is best for that community. And it's why D.C. has intervened in the case. You have the Office of the Attorney General, the Public Service Commission, even the Office of the People's Council. They have all intervened on behalf of district residents in this case.
But you're saying that if the people don't rise up, it's just like what's going on around this unfortunate situation with Brother George Floyd. And let the people let their voices be known at the Public Service Commission and their governors know that they're watching what position this is that they're taking in terms of whether they're going to
the states
move forward in an aggressive manner.
So we need the people to speak up. We need them to reach out to their representatives, to their governors, and demand that their state intervene in this action on their behalf. Whether they are solar homeowners, whether they're thinking about going solar, or they're simply supporters of solar clean energy, they need to speak up. And they can do that by going to our website, which is safesolar.org, and they can submit comments to their governors asking them to intervene in the case on their residents' behalf. And in the case of D.C., where our government has already intervened, you can we'll collect those comments and send them directly to the FERC commissioners.
Okay.
So they
now,
know where you're standing.
I need you to do me a favor, Yesenia. I need you to repeat what you just said and slow it down about to 30 miles an hour. If you run about, you're talking about 90 miles an hour now. And I know you don't mean no harm, but I know how busy that the school is.
Yeah,
you.
I know.
So please slow it down. Give people the website. I think the date is June 15th, which is the deadline for public comment.
Yes.
So we people
yes.
don't we don't have a whole lot of time to get this information out to the masses so that they can contact their local officials and they can weigh in and they can go to these websites and send their response concerning this petition, because, ladies and gentlemen, let me say this to you. As I indicated, public policy builds legislation comes from public policy. And if you're talking about the system, and everybody's talking about system, if you are not participating in the public policy, if you're not participating and going to these meetings and then making sure that you are aware of what's going on in your community, and you need to be able to make sure, I'm going to make sure that Mrs. Riviera gives you their website. You have my website, positivechangepc.com, go on the news and events, and you will see the link. But you see, to please give your that information, because you got two websites you got to give out. You got to give the website for your organization and the ones that y'all have set up specifically for this initiative.
So the website for the initiative for the net metering case, it's really simple. It's savesolar.org.
Savesolar.org. I'm repeating you.
Yeah.
Savesolar.org. Okay.
Yeah. And if you go to and if you go to that website, like I said, you can select if you're a homeowner or you're a business that has gone solar, if you're neither but support solar rights, or if you work in the solar industry, and we can help you comment to your governor or even the FERC commissioners on where you stand in this case. And if your governor hasn't intervened, it goes and asks the governor to intervene on behalf of its residents. Now, if you want to go to our website, and it's very simple, it's solarunitedneighbors.org. Again, solarunitedneighbors.org. So if you live in one of the 12 states where we have programs, you can come by and check and see if we have any co-ops active in your state and in your county and sign up and go solar through us. If you want to learn more about what's going on the ground in your state in ways that you can help advocate another policy challenge, that information is there too.
Well, you've seen it. You're not talking just to the local audience. You're talking to a national and international audience, because over the 4 years that I've been doing this program, our listenership has exploded. So I want you to let people know, if they are living in one of the states that they don't have a branch, if people are interested in getting information to start on, they can also go to the website and they'll be able to get that information there also, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you see this? 30 minutes is gone. And I told you I won't keep you 30 minutes, and you've done 30 minutes. So I know you got to go, okay?
Thanks, Ron.
But in closing, what do you want to leave with our listening audience to impress upon them the importance of them respond just like they're in the streets right now? They need to be responding like that, because it's going to be 95 today. Everybody got to get that thermostat.
Yeah.
hit that air conditioner. Today you won't turn something on. Okay?
Yep.
You won't turn something on. Guess what you just did? Your utility bill just went up. So,
yep.
The sun comes up every day. Those folks who have TV systems on their roofs, ladies and gentlemen, when 95 hits, they get paid. So the higher it gets, the more energy those panels generate. So it only makes sense. We're talking about national economic development strategy for communities, all communities, but specifically, I'm beating the drum for communities of color to understand that this is an economic development strategy, because once you put that TV system on the top of that roof, not only have you created a long-term contract where you basically frozen your utility costs for from now until that system is removed or it's passed on to the next person who buys the home. So this is a long-range strategy that works. It's called the sun comes up every day. Take advantage of it. So with that being said, Yesenia Rivera, thank you for taking time from your busy schedule and joining us here
on
Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And this will be available on my website. I will send you a link, and we're streaming over Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. So we're out there. So this show will be available. And I will send you the link.
And I just want to, before I go, this is about control over your energy if you can decide where it comes from. So, you know, if you want to dictate where your energy comes from, you want your state to be the one making the decision versus the federal government, then chime in.
Well, we have to beat the drum, Yesenia, because unfortunately for the last 5 days, and I don't know how many of shows you've been on, it's nothing out here in the media talking about this very important issue. And I just wanted to make sure that I had someone on from the group that has identified this and spearheaded the call to arms for this fight, because it's a fight for everybody. Okay? It's a fight for everybody. And this is always the issue. Our community can't be missing in action on this. It's too much at stake. And I want to thank you for joining us today, Katrina. You've seen it. And you will not be a stranger on the airwaves of Solar Now in the Future. All right. Bye-bye.
My pleasure. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, you were just listening to Mrs. Yesenia Rivera, who is the Director of Energy, Equity, and Inclusion for DC Sun. Well, as I've indicated to you, that we would be going right into and listening to the webinar that I had the privilege of being a part of last week, Thursday, that will give you more details on this issue, and we will be doing that. But first, we're going to take a pause for the call here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. You can
singing. I got trouble singing.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, back to the airwaves of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, that this show is brought to you every week by the Topic Exchange Purchasing Cooperative, LLC. And you know, Topic Exchange Purchasing Corporate LLC is a blueprint for economic self-reliance. Solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African American owned solar. Design, installation, and workforce development training companies. To address the effects of high energy costs at our historic Black colleges and universities. Also, we are also looking at how this impacts the education of our community around the issue of environmental education, local and national, and the economic impacts of climate change and the need for more environmental education in the Black community through Black Talk Radio shows, such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. It's also brought to you by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, and you will be able to get more information concerning that initiative by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. Please scroll from left to right, all the way over at the top of the page, and you will see our GoFundMe link, and it is self-explanatory of what we are doing here on this platform, Solar Now and the Future, with its economic impact on Black America. Now, as I indicated to you, that we would be going right into sharing information that was put out by Neighborhoods United, by Mr. Glenn Bryan, who is the Vice President of Policy and Advocacy for Solar United Neighbors. And without further ado, we're going to go right in to that video.
Welcome, everyone. Good afternoon. My name is Glenn Bryan. I'm Director of Policy and Advocacy for Solar United Neighbors. And this is a one-hour-long webinar on defending your solar rights and solar. About the Harris petition and threat to get needed. I see an initial question. Yes, the recordings for this webinar will be made available to all the registered companies. So we have a fact agenda, and so let's go to the next slide. So, talking about what you can expect. First of all, in addition to myself, I think the speakers will be Nathan Phelps from both Solar, Dave Anderson from the Energy and Policy Institute, and Liz Daisy, my colleague at Solar United. Take a look at the agenda. So I'll say a few words about logistics and brief introduction. Nathan Phelps from Solar will talk about your petition, the process that's ongoing right now. Dave Anderson from Energy Policy Institute will talk about what we need to know about the group behind the petition. And Liz Daisy will talk about what people on this call and elsewhere theory impact the outcome. Then we'll follow up with Q&A, and then we'll finish. Next slide, please. We'll worry about logistics. If you have questions, and you can enter them at any time, type the questions in the Q&A feature at Zoom. You can take a look at the bottom of your screen, and you'll see Q&A click there. You can also feel free to use the chat function, but we're going to try to use the Q&A for questions. And again, all webinar registrants can receive an email at the webinar link to view the recording of the webinar as well as this live presentation. If you have any technical difficulties during the webinar, please just post it to the chat. One of our staff will try to respond. All right, next slide. So our first speaker is Nathan Phelps. Nathan is a regulatory director for our partner organization, Grove Solar. He's going to talk about the specifics of the petition and the method today.
Thanks, Glenn, and thank you to everyone attending the webinar. I'm happy to have you here and happy to chat about this. So first, NERA. NERA is the New England Ratepayers Association. Today we'll be discussing NERA, so we can just set the organization aside for a minute. And then FERC. FERC is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Each state has an agency that oversees electric utilities. They regulate them. These are often called public utility commissions or PUCs. And the PUCs oversee how people pay for electricity. That's typically referred to as retail. Well, FERC is the federal equivalent of these PUCs, these public utility commissions. And FERC oversees how essentially utilities electricity to other utilities and how large power plants sell electricity to utilities. And this is typically referred to as wholesale. It's important that you kind of understand the dynamic between the states and the federal government in this conversation, which is why I'm just trying to lay the foundation now. Next slide. Just a little bit about Vote Solar. We're a national nonprofit. We've been around coming up in 20 years. We're really trying to bring solar to make it very, very common across the country. Next slide. So, how did we get here? What is happening? That's basically what I'm trying to cover for everyone on that webinar right now. Next slide. This all started about 6 weeks ago. Personally, to me, it seems about an eternity ago. So a lot's happened in the last 6 weeks. So FERC got this petition from NERA. The next day, they set this comment deadline for just 3 days, which is a pretty tight turnaround. We started to see a lot of interventions, so fancy way of saying people are getting involved in the proceeding effort. One of those interventions was from NARUC, and NARUC is the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners, which is the kind of association of PUCs, basically. So they're representing PUCs from all the states. Well, NARUC asked for a 90-day extension. NERA disagreed. They said, maybe 30 days. And FERC actually agreed with that 30-day extension. So we actually have a deadline to participate in this proceeding to submit comments on June 15th. June 15th is not that far away, just essentially a couple weeks away. So we still have a lot of work to do to continue to spread the word about this petition and to build strong coalition as possible to oppose the petition. Next slide. So what exactly is the petition? NERA is essentially asking FERC to take away the ability of states to implement net metering, at least as we traditionally think of net metering. What specifically what NERA is asking is that they want FERC to assert control a solar customer X to state to the grid. Stated differently, NERA wants FERC to say that net metering is a wholesale program and therefore under the jurisdiction of FERC, and it's not a retail program, which would be under the jurisdiction of the state. NERA essentially wants FERC to treat solar homeowners as power generators, large power plants. So that's a lot of jargon. Let me try to actually explain this a little bit more practical terms. With traditional net metering, if you are generating more electricity than you're using in that moment, then you can run your meter backwards. And so at the end of the month, you're only billed for your net usage of electricity. NERA is asking for to require that solar customers only receive a wholesale credit for any electricity that's exported to the grid. This is a double whammy. So first, it eliminates monthly netting, which is a really simple process. And then the second is the value of the energy that would be exported to the grid would be greatly reduced. So we'd be going from retail credits down to wholesale, which, depending on where you are in the country, can be quite substantial, and it accumulates very quickly over time as far as the loss. Next slide. So net metering is not a new issue. Net metering was first implemented on a statewide basis almost 40 years ago, and then 20 years ago, FERC actually looked at the specific issue. And at that time, FERC said, this is a state issue. This is not a federal government issue. NERA wants FERC to change course. They want FERC to reverse their position. And essentially is where we're at right now, as far as what the petition is doing and trying to reverse the existing divide or jurisdiction between the state and federal government. Next slide. I cannot emphasize enough how big the impacts of this would be if FERC were to agree with the petition. So millions of households across the country, about 100,000 commercial and industrial customers, net meter. All of those customers would have greatly reduced value if FERC was to change their position. We're talking thousands of dollars for these customers. In a range of hundreds of dollars per year in lost value. On top of that, almost every state would actually have to go through and start a proceeding to change their net metering policies. Because they essentially would be preempted by the federal government. And all of that would be taking place in the middle of a pandemic. And this really fundamentally has the potential to shift the dynamic between the state and the federal government as far as who has control over what policies. So these impacts are very, very large. Even if there's a small chance that FERC agrees with NERA, it really requires all of us to be fighting this as much as possible. Next slide. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jason. We appreciate it. We'll be addressing a lot of questions that are coming in during the Q&A period, so feel free to type them in as they refer to you, and we will address them. Our next speaker is Dave Anderson, and Dave is policy energy and policy institute, and they have done some digging about who the group is behind the petition. Dave?
Hello, everyone. You can jump to the next slide. So who is the New England Ratepayers Association? That's a question that's bugged clean energy supporters in New England for quite a few years. It's actually been asked publicly by state lawmakers from both parties, and they so far received no clear answers from NERA. The group was formed in 2013, and very quickly ramped up to fight the Cape Wind Project, and then later that year actually supported a federal gas pipeline permitting bill that was backed by the gas and utility industry. So they're definitely not a NIMBY group when it comes to energy projects. And in that case, they're very much opposing a major offshore wind project, and then soon thereafter supporting a pretty big bill that was backed by the fossil fuel industry. The group's executive director, and really the only publicly active member of their board of directors and officers, is an individual named Mark Brown. He used to run an ice cream shop and then landed a job with Freedom Works, which is a Tea Party group that's still active and received fossil fuel industry money back in 2000. He now runs a lobbying firm that represents the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers, a private prison company, and others. You can jump to the next slide. So NIR doesn't disclose the identities of its members and funders, but does say on its website and elsewhere that it represents the interests of families and businesses in New Hampshire, thus the Great Mayor's name. Public Citizen has presented some evidence further in the past and made the point publicly that NIR is funded by a relatively small number of contributors, and they suspect that NIR is actually operated more like an industry group and backed by a small number of companies. That's particularly important in the case of this position because it may very well be backed by a fossil fuel utility interest that would directly benefit from the challenge in that metering. So, short answer is we still don't know exactly who funds NIRA, but we do know a lot about the group's ties to fossil fuel and utility interests, and how the group often aligns with these interests to oppose clean energy policies in states like New Hampshire, and Massachusetts, and now federally. We do also know that NIRA works very closely with members of the powerful Sununu family, including two brothers of New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu, who's opposed the expansion of net metering in New Hampshire and cap utilities among the tax owners. And the image here is just of a man I attended a while back, an annual energy symposium that was often sponsored by NIRA and most of the state's major electric utilities and fossil fuel interests. You can jump to the next slide. So here's a few ways that you're connected to the fossil fuel and the utility industries. On the left top-hand side here, you can see a group called the New England Coalition for Affordable Energy, which is publicly backed by the American Petroleum Institute and is essentially a project of that organization. NIR's executive director, Mark Brown, is listed as an advisor to that coalition, and NIR is also listed on his website as a member. So pretty clear ties to the oil and gas industry there. NIR is also a member of another group called the Consumer Energy Alliance, who is actually made up more of producers of energy. That includes major fossil fuel companies and utilities, as well as some large industrial energy users. And they have also been active in fighting expansions of net metering in New Hampshire and attempting to weaken the existing net metering policies here, sometimes with the same stocks as NIR. 2 years ago, Mark Brown finally formed another shadowy group at the Foundry, who gave the Ratepayers Legal Defense Fund. And that group hasn't been very active publicly, but it has disclosed and paperwork with the IRS and with the State of Delaware, where it's incorporated, that its board of directors include James and Michael Sununu, the Sununu brothers I mentioned earlier, a few Republican state legislators who've been very active in fighting net metering bills in New Hampshire, and also a fellow named Geoffrey Mitchell of Grand Energy, who is a longtime consultant for the gas and utility industry. So you see that Mark Brown wears a lot of hats, and often he's in a room with other people wearing hats representing the fossil fuel and fuel industry. Sounds like I'll get into on the next slide. Can you switch slides? So here you have a now no longer live website of Sununu Enterprises, which is run by James and Michael Sununu, who work very closely with NIRA. And as you can see, they talk about how their company is the Department of Power, companies involved in power development, and quite a few other utility-related industries. They do not, of course, disclose who those power companies are, which, I mean, an interesting question that may also be answered eventually. Next slide. And then I mentioned that the other member of the Ratepayers Legal Defense Fund Board of Directors is Geoffrey Mitchell, who runs a consulting firm called Giant Energy. They interestingly do disclose the clients that they've represented in the past, and as you can see, it's a pretty long list of both domestic and foreign fossil fuel and utility companies. So I think that's one of the more direct links to someone who does work directly for the fossil fuel and utility industries that we have recently learned about for ERA. Next slide. So the NERA petition was filed by a couple of attorneys at Septo Johnson, one of whom's name is David B. Ratner. And he was actually pitching the idea of a FERC petition challenging state net metering policies to utility audiences in 2014 and probably in the years around that. So that meeting held by the Edison Electric Institute, as well as something called the Harvard Electricity Policy Group, whose executive director, Ashley Brown, often testifies against net metering on behalf of utility clients. Ashley Brown is actually your expert witness, whose testimony is included in its net metering petition to FERC. The other interesting thing about the docket is you have seen some major utilities like AEP, Dominion Energy, and Duke Energy file to intervene, but they haven't taken a position yet. So, say the next few weeks between now and when they put up to file any comments that they wish to go on record with, would be a good time to ask them about any connections that they have to the petition and what their position on it will be. Next slide, please. What's being done to deal with your funders? A lot of stakeholders are asking FERC to require NERA to disclose the funders, and in particular, which members or funders is representing the business net metering petition. And as I mentioned earlier, that seems really key because it's important to know whether members or funders will directly benefit from this challenge to net metering policies across the nation. A lot of reporters are also asking questions of Mark Brown about his funders. Some FOIAs have been filed by different environmental groups, some of which can be found online. I know in one interesting case, a local reporter here in New England asked Mark Brown for comments, not only on whether they're funded by fossil fuel utility interests, but specifically whether they were representing utility interests that are funded by them. And he didn't respond to that more specific question, which was interesting, because he's responded in the past to more general questions about who their funders are. So, sort of a non-answer that basically volumes what we'll see. I've also included a link here on this slide to a page that we put together just with a lot more background information about ERA, and it gets into a lot of the group's connection to the fossil fuel and utility industry and different players who represent those industries in New England. So feel free to check that out. A lot more information that I can really unpack here.
Cool. Thanks, Dave.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Dave, very much. Our next speaker is my colleague, Zizi, who is the solar advocacy campaign for Solar United Neighbors. And she's going to talk about what we can do about the situation and what the grassroots opposition can do. Okay.
Great. Thanks, Glenn. Thanks, everyone. Good to be here. I just wanted to start with Solar United Neighbors' theory of change and a little bit about us as an organization. So we really believe in this circular theory and really doing this over and over through our solar co-op. So we help people go solar together, make it easier and lower costs for people to go solar. We do that a lot, and then we get people involved in other ways. We have solar congresses, solar scouting programs like Sun Scout, happy hours, webinars like this. We do a national solar tour, partnerships with some other organizations every fall. And we continually are working to mobilize and organize our top solar owners to fight for their rights. And so we have helped people engage and get better state policies, like some recent policies in Virginia around homeowners associations and the energy legislation. I think there was a question around that we'll circle back to. We've been involved with state regulation and utility commissions, and then nationally and things like this petition. So we're continually sort of building movement and really excited to have everybody here joining us. And wanted to touch a little bit on solar rights. This is sort of how we articulate those, and I think particularly in the NERA case, so this is a really important place for us to stand up and protect our solar rights. We think they're not partisan. Everyone should have access to solar, whether on the roof or part of community solar. And it's really important for it to be part of a competitive market, and that some version of net metering and fair compensation is really important. So that's really the basis of where we're coming from. I'm really excited about the Statue of Liberty solar image that one of our staffers created. And we, as solar homeowners, business supporters and supporters, we all have an important role to protect solar rights, and we're compelling advocates. So we're going to talk about how people can do that around this NERA petition. And so I wanted to show this slide. I think, Nathan, you made this slide for and I think Nathan has been tracking the details of this a little more closely, so we can dig into that if people have questions. But just wanted to sort of show some of the folks who have intervened so far. In our strategy in around this campaign, working closely with both Solar and the Solar Energy Industry Association, or SEIA, we decided to target governor to get states to intervene in this petition. And so there are some that have already taken action, either utility commissions or the blue, the yellow or attorney general, the red or other state agencies like state energy offices, for example, in Colorado. And then in some places, like in DC, Maryland, a couple other states, multiple agencies are all taking action. And, we don't know which side these people are going to come down on. So, we think, and Nathan can probably talk more about this, but we think that a lot of them are going to stand up for states' rights, and that even if they don't like that metering policy per se, that they think that it is important for states to be able to set some policy and decide for themselves. So that's what we think, but we don't, we're not sure exactly which way people are going to come down. And there's still a lot of governors who, and a lot of attorney generals haven't taken action. So the basis of, how we're telling people to take action, we work closely with Go Solar to launch statesolar.org as a website to make it easy for people to take action. And I'm sure one of my colleagues can put that in the chat. For most states, those actions are going directly and immediately to their governor when people take action. For Florida, we decided the governor was not a great target, so we have statesolar.org/act-now for Florida. And so people in Florida, that will not go to the governor. We'll just go, we will bundle the ones from Florida and from all of the other states and submit those to FERC. Right around June 15th, which is the due date. And on the site, we have a couple different, you can click on a button to have a special letter for being a solar homeowner or business powered by solar, if you work in the solar industry, if you own a solar company, and if you're a solar supporter, we have customized letters. And then we're hoping, we really encourage people to add a sentence or two or more about your situation and why you think this is important, and, you know, your story about solar. So I think that's about it for that site. We've already had 10,000 people take action, so we're really excited about that, but we need more people to take action. We have everybody here today to take action and share the action. Yeah, and just a reminder that there's the savesolar.org for everybody, and then savesolar.org/back-now for Florida. And we encourage people to customize your letters. If you can talk about your solar business, you can talk about the number of jobs you create, or other impacts from your business, and, you know, what the stakes of this are for you. That's important. You could write a letter to your local newspaper. We've already had a few of those published, and a few articles come out this week on this topic. One interviewing a solar homeowner and solar net neighbors member, which was exciting. Yeah, and just a reminder again to spread the word and share savesolar.org and ask people to take action. We will follow up from the webinar and make sure everybody gets a sample email you could use to spread the word and some social share links to make it easy to spread the word. Yeah, and I love that image of the oil electric cord snake, and so we'll make sure people can access those images as well. And yeah, here are all of our organizational websites, Solar United Neighbors, the Solar Energy Policy Institute. So feel free to reach out. You can reach Glenn and I at advocacy@solarunitedneighbors.org, and we're happy to take your questions. And yeah, Glenn, I think I'll pass it back to you. I think we have a whole lot of questions.
We do. Thanks very much, Liz. So again, if you have any specific questions that will not be answered, but there's too many questions for us to answer today. We will do our best. Feel free to send us an email or ask to see at solarunitednavis.org for our best to get back to you. And again, there's information back to the system on savesolar.org, and we're going to say that a few more times for everybody. We really encourage people to go to that site.
As of today, we've seen 26 states get involved in some way, shape, or form in this proceeding, plus the District of Columbia. It's likely that all of those states, or the vast majority of those states, will be opposing the petition, especially on the grounds of protecting the state's ability to set net metering policies as a retail program. But I can't say for sure that all of those states will be opposing the petition, just because none of the participants in the proceeding have had to state their position so far.
Thank you. Just a question, David, again for you, is what's NARA's motivation? As somebody asked, what does NARA get out of this shit, the wholesale meters? What's the real motivation?
I think the petition gets at that. It's pretty clear that they align with the utility industry's view, which has been that net metering creates sort of a cost shift for customers. And, I think there's a lot of evidence that shows that cost shift is pretty insignificant and it's not really a big deal. And it's interesting, New Hampshire's consumer advocate recently wrote an op-ed saying he wouldn't be intervening in this case and actually said net metering is not a big deal in New Hampshire. So you can sort of see that NARA is not necessarily representing the interests of ratepayers in its home region on this issue. And also it raises the question, of course, of who funds them and why do the arguments align so closely with those made on net metering by the Edison Electric Institute and a lot of major utilities.
Thank you. Here's an interesting question. Nathan, you may know the answer to this one. It says, does NARA set a threshold amount for kilowatts? What was the wholesale or was it fall at all?
Yeah, the way the petition is framed is any time a customer exports electricity to the grid. So it doesn't actually matter the size of your system. A threshold question. The threshold is, does any electricity go from the customer's premise through the meter and onto the electric distribution system? So that's really the issue. It could be you have a very small net metering system, or you have a very large net metering system that is available to the argument.
Here's another interesting question. I'll recap the question. What effect would the petition, if put granted, have on power purchase agreements?
I'll take it. It's a really good question. The petition fundamentally would change the value proposition for customers. What I mean by that is customers that install solar would receive less value than they otherwise would have if this petition didn't come along. So what that means for power purchase agreements is it kind of changes the underlying assumptions. The amount of money that you have to pay for the energy you produce could no longer represent a savings for the value that you will get from the electricity. So it really depends on the specifics of the power purchase agreement, but fundamentally the underlying assumptions of the value would change as a result of this decision.
Thank you. There's a couple of questions that have to do with whether or not, if you live in a state or you have a utility that only credits the debt metering of the wholesale rate currently, question that people put in various ways is, what's the impact? Nathan, I have my understanding is that there's a very real possibility that net metering could then become a buy-all, sell-all program, which in effect is not net metering, if you understand it. Is that your understanding
as well? Yeah, it really does depend, I will say, on the specifics of the program where you are. So keep in mind that we really, so far in this discussion, we're talking about state-level policies, but there are also a lot of policies. cooperatives, and also by municipal electricity plants, or munis, as they're typically called. And those really are different across the country, so the details depend drastically on where you're located. However, specifically in regard to the question, there's really two things to look at. Most of the time, customers allowed to net over the course of a month, essentially. And that netting ability could go away. So that's the first question, are you allowed to net? And then if you are allowed to net, then the value for any of your net excess over the course of a month could be reduced. However, there are some net metering policies that do not allow you to net. So this could be basically a state that says you are not allowed to net at all. Anything you export to the grid will be compensated at X amount. That amount could be the wholesale rate. So it could be a situation where you may not be impacted. That is a very, very small percentage, though, of net metering customers in the U.S.
Of course, that doesn't really take into consideration the possible tax, additional tax burden of the system for the might change.
Correct.
Here's a question from Joy from Virginia. Do we have any, I'll address this to Liz, do you have any idea what Virginia will do in terms of student service position? Has any Virginia agency intervened at this point? Nathan, you might know.
I think that's more of a Nathan question. I can look at my list of the folks. I think we have heard some from electric co-ops in Virginia that they might be coming out against this, but I think we're not sure about that.
As of right now, no state agency in Virginia has intervened in the first evening. So it's possible they could, over the next couple of weeks, actually weigh in. But they haven't as of yet. That doesn't mean that they're not involved in any way, shape, or form. Some states have been getting involved through their central associations. I mentioned earlier, NARUC. That's the Association of Public Utility Commissioners. There are also other associations. So there's an association for attorneys general, there's an association for energy offices, and there's an association for ratepayer advocates. Principles that state agencies specifically could be getting involved through their association is hard if that's actually happening in each agency.
Great. All right, here's an interesting question for you, Nathan. There's been a couple of questions like this. So what is the merit, if any, of NARUC petition? Like, what is it really based on besides the hostility that we've identified and represented the interest of not the media?
I may not be the best person to answer this question, only because I actually don't think that there is very much merit to their petition. But the underlying argument is really that any time an entity generates electricity and exports it to the grid, that is inherently a sale for resale. It's a technical term that really goes back to federal statute language. But basically, the argument is anytime somebody exports electricity to the grid, that is being, by design, meant to be sold to somebody else, and therefore it would be federal authority. I do not agree with that argument, but that's what they're asserting.
Here's a question about the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy opposing this petition, and I believe they have. Is that correct?
Yeah, they are definitely on our side. They sent the action alert, I think, to at least the Florida list. I'm not sure if they are officially intervening. but I think they're definitely supportive of this.
Great. Here are two interesting questions. One is from our friend in D.C., Ron Papaya. He was a producer of radio show that often talks about solar in Black America. The question is, how are you engaging the African American community on this issue? Do you want to take that question?
Oh, I was trying to type some answers to other questions.
Happy to start. So I'll note that I've been in contact with NAACP about this issue to make sure that they were aware of it.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm back. Now, you heard my question. You heard the response that this gentleman has been in contact with the NAACP, Legal Defense of Department that deals with climate and environmental justice, which I am aware of it, and I also know the individuals that are there. And I understand how busy everybody is. But if you're trying to disseminate information, you have to go to Black media. Now, I don't know how many African-American owned publications have been contacted. I didn't raise that question. I don't know how many Black radio talk shows or producers have been contacted. But I do know that you are listening to this information over the airwaves of Blog Talk Radio, streaming over Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Twitter, being broadcast from Lovely to Talk. Tacoma Park, Maryland, over the platform of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Now, we're at the end of our show today, and I want to do a commentary, which I will do at the beginning of our show next week, because I wanted to do a commentary about the death of Brother George Floyd and his tragic death, and to let people know where we are in America. So I went back and I pulled out one of our messages from one of our great scholars, Dr. Samuel Yeh. And he wrote in his book, which was published in 1971, and I was a student at Morgan State College, Baltimore, Maryland. He published The Choice, The Issue of Black Survival in America. And in this book, in chapter 6, the laws, a legal police state, he states, in a television interview in the early 70s, Congressman John Conyers, who investigated the Panthers' headquarters in Chicago, said in a WTOP television interview in Washington, D.C., that a high Justice Department official had admitted to him their intention was to exterminate the Black Panther Party by any means necessary. Now, this went on to deal with another organization, activist organization like the FDS, which was also a movement at that time. Yours truly lived in that it was a young person in that area, like these young people are in the street today. But in 1971, the passing of Nixon, President Nixon, omnibus crime legislation, and this is what it meant. The philosophy behind the bill is that catching the criminal or the suspect criminal validated any invasion of rights guaranteed to all of us. The new bill created a type of grand jury which do nothing but issue reports on the activities of the local citizens whom government does not have a necessary evidence to indict, much less convict. In other words, in 1970, the police state was not only a fact, it became legal. If you look at what was passed in the tax bill on September 18, 1969, the House passed the tax bill. This had a Hitlerian provision. With the House and the Senate, the provision provided for no knock, search, and seizure to prevent detention. Those two provisions not only legitimized pre-dawn raids, but also took away the right of the victim to either resist physically, as the captors had done in 68. Ladies and gentlemen, let me be clear. Public policy turns into legislation. This movement in the street with our young people must be about developing public policy into legislation. Because without that, this will continue as one of our great, great freedom fighters indicated, Dr. Francis Wilson. This will continue to happen. So, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we're closing our show today here, Solar Now and the Future, with this economic impact on Black America. And I hope that we definitely owe you news that you can definitely use.
Someone singing, I can trust, sing it. Life is a song worth singing, why don't you sing it? You hold the key in the palm of your hand, use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan, change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.